Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
What's happening, everybody? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today we have husband, new father, senior reporter for SB Live, Tark.
Thanks for having me in, man. I've been watching the episode. Like, okay, I'm ready for the big first question. I'm looking at the wall. Hit me with it, man.
There you go. First question. Favorite Who movie of all time and why?
I mean, I'll I'm not gonna bury the lead here. It's White Man Can't Jump. For me, Billy Hoyle, just the backwards hat, the everything about that movie. That's one of those movies. There's few, I think, that we have in life where it doesn't matter what point you might come across it when you're watching TV, you will just pick up where you, okay, there's only 15 minutes left, whatever, I'm watching, you know, you just watch the rest. So White Man Can't Jump is up there for me. Love the air up there. Coach Carter, I think, are kind of some honorable mentions. And of course, Love and Basketball. Right. Can't go wrong with that one. But for me, it's White Man Can't Jump.
Did you ever dunk in your day?
I did. Just this past weekend, I was doing, I do shows on the weekend for CBS, and some of the guys in the production room and Sua Cravens, who played at SC, who's on the show with us, they were asking about like, hey man, what was your game like? I'm like, dude, I could actually get up a little, you know? Yeah. And so there was this YouTube video of me like doing dunks and stuff like that. And they were all pleasantly surprised, but yes. I don't know if I was the antithesis of that title, but I could certainly get up a little bit back in my day.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Played with you many times.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Always fun. Great basketball player. You actually taught me some things on the court.
Oh,
back
stop.
In my ball hogging days.
Stop.
Like, Todd, pass it. That's what he taught me.
Okay. Yeah. Now that might be true.
Absolutely. So we like to roll right into it, man. When did you fall in love with basketball?
You know, it's a, I grew up playing soccer. Soccer was my first love. My dad, a lot of people don't know this. My dad grew up, my parents got divorced when I was little. And then my dad was born and raised in Syria, born in Syria, raised in Lebanon, but grew up most of his life in London. Mm. So at about 2 years old, my parents got divorced. He went back to London where he basically lived most of his life. And the reason I bring that up is because at 5 or 6 years old, every summer, every other Easter, and every other Christmas, I would get put on a plane and flown to London to visit my dad. So my first unaccompanied minor flight to London, I was 5 years old. So I've been on 777 jumbo jets, 747 jumbo jets. So I was 5, 6 years old, in and out of airports. You have a stewardess that's with you. You're unaccompanied minor. You always have someone holding your hand. But I bring up that story because soccer was really my first love. My dad would take me to English Premier League games. I grew up a Chelsea fan, going to Stamford Bridge, and that was soccer. So that was my first love in regard to athletics and professional sport and being in the stadium and seeing it and going, wow, this is making an impression on me. So I grew up playing soccer, club, travel, pretty good. But then about middle school, junior high, basketball came around and I just thought, wow, this is fun. And that was like at recess, lunch. I'd never played organized basketball until I was about sixth, seventh, eighth grade, really a late bloomer per se. But I had the athleticism. I picked it up. But what made me fall in love with basketball, believe it or not, was practice. And this is why.
Not a game.
Soccer practice. Yeah, not a game. Not a game, but practice. Soccer practice sucks. Soccer matches, playing in a game, trying to score goals, is a blast.
Got it.
Soccer practice, horrible. A lot of footwork, a lot of one touch, a lot of running. It's training. It's not fun. Basketball practice, if you got a good coach that knows what he's doing and can keep the players engaged, you're basically competing at everything you do.
Yeah.
Shooting, shell drill, don't let the offense get the ball in the I mean, you could think of a million ways to make a game out of a drill or in a way that, so that to me was like, okay, I'd rather be doing this every day than touching cones and working on footwork.
Yes.
And so I would say about a long-winded answer, but junior high is when I really started getting into basketball. And I think it's because of practice. It's because I was what I was doing every day that became more fun and appealing to me.
Man, you fell in love with the grind.
And that's really what it was.
It's very rare. Actually, everyone who's sat in this chair says like between 2 and 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't pick up a ball till I was 11.
Okay.
Well. So I was a late bloomer to the sport mm-hmm. as well and fell in love with it later on. But, you know, fell in love with it. So, and then this, the other thing is this, I want to mention about soccer. They're trying to change that. So there's a place called Play Academy.
Okay.
And they are implementing this guy from, might be from London. Ah, where is he from? Lee is from, I can't remember, somewhere in Europe, but he's developed multiple pros by using competitive games in soccer instead of skills. He's a believer in just play the game and I teach you the skills inside of the game.
Correct.
And so there's some philosophies out there with soccer now where it's less boring, but I understand.
Yeah.
So that's why I couldn't play any other sport.
I mean, it's like, I'm just trying, you know, again, for me, my experience, like with baseball, just there's so many aspects. That's where I think coaching at the really young level matters, because at the end of the day, when you're talking about little ones, you got to keep them engaged.
Yes.
And I'm talking about little ones like 10, 12 years old, you're still little.
Yes.
And if it's not engaging, if you're not having fun at practice, it's like, why am I out here?
100%.
So that was a big reason why basketball became a true love of mine.
Awesome. So playing in middle school, what was it like? Where did you develop? Did you have a trainer? Did you go? Was it the practice only? And did you play AAU ball there?
No. And so all the way through high school, never played one bounce of AAU basketball. You know, raised by a single mom, so she didn't know. She would tell you in the debate of nature versus nurture. Definitely, she's like nature all day long. Not a sports forward person. I came from a sports family. If anything, baseball was more so. My uncles played baseball and stuff like that, but no one played basketball. No one played soccer. So I think just by the atmosphere I was in at school, PE, things like that, educators that influenced me, coaches, that was, I'm a example of that. And actually my PE coach, I went to St. Euphrasia, which is just a stone's throw away from now, which is called Hillcrest Heritage Christian, but it was Hillcrest Christian at the time off Shoshone and Rinaldi. St. Euphrasia through K through eighth grade, and my PE teacher was a guy named Kimo Atkins.
Oh,
yeah,
Kimo.
Yep. And so for those who are in the Valley and been around a while, Bengals and hoops, you know who Kimo Atkins is. That was my PE teacher, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. Obviously, a basketball guy and a great athlete. So to me, he kind of just took me under his wing. I was playing junior high basketball and learned a lot of skills from him. And he would do clinics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Mom, I want to go. Okay. And I would go. And so it was more of a self-interest. And then I started to fall in love with the game. So that's really where my development came from, was like Kimo Atkins. That's the truth.
And no, he's actually responsible for a lot of kids in the Valley. Like he took care of kids
yes.
that didn't have much. He didn't care. He wanted you in the gym.
Yep.
Him and his wife, man, they are like the
yep.
most Debbie. People.
Debbie yep. took, no
so when
question.
I first moved back to California, I worked. She was the manager at 360 Health Club.
Okay.
And that's where I met her. And just took me under her wing. Like I'm out here fresh in California with, you know, in college, and that she, you know, assumed that auntie role in my life even.
No question, man. Debbie's like, yeah, she's got a lot of kids per se, you know, I think she would say. But yeah, Kimo and Debbie were influential for me when I was a little kid and getting into sports. That was awesome. Just athletics in general. It was like Kimo Atkins, flag football, all that stuff.
That's awesome. So never playing AAU basketball at all. So your high school experience, you're at Hillcrest, a smaller Christian school in the area, but what was your experience?
So my high school, so a lot of people don't know. So I went to Crespi. So my freshman year of high school, my freshman and sophomore year, I was at Crespi
okay.
in Encino. And I was really young. My birthday is November 30th.
Oh,
And so I was a 13-year-old freshman that turned 14 November 30th of my senior
of your freshman year.
Correct. Again, I always, my mom didn't know. She just, right. It was like, hey, I got put in kindergarten when I was four. And it was like, took whatever tests or placement. Okay, yeah, he's good to go. Put him in. My mom was like, great, put him in. She didn't realize sports, it would impact my sports. Anyway, so my freshman year of high school, I'm 5'4", 103 pounds. And I go out for the freshman basketball team at Crespi. And like 100 kids show up. And I tell you what, man, it sounds really corny, but it's like one of the greatest accomplishments of my young life was making that team. Yeah. We all know now those teams at that level are pretty much picked already. You know what kids are coming in and you know which ones you're going to develop. Maybe a ringer or two shows up to tryouts. Yeah. That was me. Made the team. I was elated. My mom would drop me off at school during tryouts because every day they would have cuts. And if your name was on the paper, you got to continue to try out the rest of the week. If your name was not on the paper in the locker room or whatever, you were cut. So my mom would just pray like, oh my God, please let his name be on the paper. And it was. So ended up getting playing freshman basketball at Crespi, 13-year-old kid, and played and had a great experience, but I wasn't growing. So my sophomore year, I played soccer at Crespi. I played JV soccer and loved that. And then I started growing. So I was this slow, gangly soccer player. And long story short, I ended up going on a missions trip with Shepherd Church. Okay. They were putting together a basketball team to go to Japan. Whoa. Yeah, a lot of people don't know this. So they wanted to take basketball, use it as a vehicle to spread the love of
this
Christ.
This is pre-Josh Merrill?
Pre-Josh Merrill.
Okay.
The gym wasn't even built yet.
Okay.
They wanted to take a basketball team, a girls and a boys basketball team, from Shepherd of the Hills, which is now Shepherd Church in Porter Ranch. And we're going to go to Japan and we're going to play basketball. We're going to set up some showcases. Awesome. We're going to bring attention to us and we're going to tell everybody we follow Christ, you know, and that's how we're going to do it. Okay, great. So my older sister was going to the church at the time and I walk into the lobby and I ran into a pastor named Danny Furukawa and I have a Crespi basketball sweater on. And he goes, hey man, we're taking a basketball team to Japan. Try out. I was like, sounds great. So I show up. You know who's there? Drew and Justin Holiday.
Oh, my goodness.
So Drew and Justin Holiday are on this team. Dallas Rutherford's on the team. This team's, like, loaded. And I'm like, I have no business being here. So I'll never forget, there's tryouts, and it's actually on the blacktop in the parking lot of Shepherd Church. The gym was not built yet.
They just bought some portable hoops.
I'm talking about, like, where you put the water in weigh it down, and like two of them, and like, all right, here we go, we're gonna do tryouts. So I'll never forget Dudley Rutherford, who helped coach the team, comes out and goes, okay. And literally, like, I felt like all the cool kids were off to the side because he goes, we have what we need to compete, and it's Drew, Justin, Dallas, and a couple other good players. He goes, now we need some role players. We need some people that are team players, good character, blah 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 blah. And I'm thinking, okay, this is my time to shine. So long story short, they needed to do tryouts for the girls. And in the middle of the tryout, the girls were one man short of either going 3-on-3, 4-on-4, or 5-on-5. I forgot what the numbers were. But it was like, all right, boys, one of you is going to have to fill in on this girls tryout. Who do you think raised his hand? I'm like, this is my opportunity to just be like a team guy.
Yep.
And I didn't, you know, I think I got a couple guys like chuckle, like, oh, and I'm just like, hey, for me, this is just an opportunity to let these girls get a 5-on-5 or a 4-on-4 in, no problem. So I play in the tryout. I'm catching the ball. I'm swinging. I'm not trying to dominate this or anything. And I think that's kind of how I got on the team. I was like, hey, you know, a team player, we'll take them.
I would have Joanna Mandy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there was no like, yeah, I wasn't
boy,
like,
girl, I
wasn't,
I don't care what
yeah,
it is,
I wasn't
don't
backing anybody down, you know, over the left shoulder, nothing like that. But I tell that story because it's important to me in my life and the trajectory of my life, because on that trip is when I gave my life to Christ. Yes.
Man.
So I go to Japan on this basketball team, not knowing anybody. I don't know a soul. I know all those guys for the first time, and we're in Japan for 10 days. And playing basketball, and I'm learning so much about Jesus. I'm learning about what that relationship is like. I'm learning differences of Catholicism, because I grew up K through 10th grade Catholicism, right, right. And asking questions, but kind of learning like, well, that's just the tradition. okay, but I'm trying to learn a little bit more where I think in a non-denominational sense with Christianity, as you know, it's like, hey, I have a question. Oh, well, just refer to the Bible. Here's actually the verse. Right. You can go learn yourself. Great, thanks. You know, like it's really all I was looking for. And so that to me connected. And so, yeah, got saved in Japan. And
so you went on a trip to go get people saved and you got saved.
That's exactly right. And that's my testimony, man. That's how I gave my life to Christ on a bullet train in Japan. I'll never forget it. And that is when I decided, okay, I need something different in my life. And I transferred from Crespi to Hillcrest Christian, which is now Heritage Christian. And totally, you know, a blessing in disguise, I played JV soccer my sophomore year. According to the CIF rules, as long as you are 365 days out of sport, you are varsity eligible. So because I played soccer my sophomore year, the transfer work right was away. The transfer paperwork was almost nothing. I got to play varsity basketball at Hillcrest from day one. So I played varsity basketball my junior, senior year. We had some good seasons, played a ton, grew, got better. Man. So that was that.
I hear a consistency of this. You have an optimistic attitude, you have high character, and you have this competitive spirit, man. What happened to little Tark
that
created that?
Man, that's a good question. I really learned that from my mom. There's no question that came from mom. Mom was a kind of a independent self, just motivating woman. And I got to watch that every day. And she just like, man, my wife.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
My wife's pretty independent and self-motivated too. But my mom, 99%, like just this kind woman. But there was this 1% of her where if you either like mess with her kids or, and this isn't exactly an anomaly, like, you know, you do certain things like mama bear is going to come out, right? And there were times where I would see like in a department store or a grocery store or some of her interactions, if she felt like there was something wrong or someone was being wronged, my mom had no issues stepping in being ridiculous, like pointing fingers and you need to be doing. And I always kind of saw that and thought, okay, when she felt like there was a time to do better and interject herself, she had the confidence to do so. And I always kind of felt, I learned that to speak up when it's necessary and to interject when it's necessary. And so when you ask like, where do you think your competitive spirit came from? Like, I think of that. I think of the kind of getting your nose in there when it's deserved. And so there were times where I felt like I kind of reached in and got that kind of energy when it came to competitive sports.
That's awesome, man. I think it's so important for parents to know how closely their kids are watching them.
Oh, yes.
And those are the moments that you remember. And it's so awesome because of what it's created in you. And you see it today, even with your reporting and your
Thank you. Your
burrito review.
Yeah, man.
Everything you do, like, it's freaking
Hey, man. People start coming after me, you know, like, oh, chorizo doesn't belong in breakfast burrito. You know, I get really fired up, you know. So the competitive nature comes out in all realms, that's for sure.
For sure. So what years were you at Hillcrest?
So I graduated 07.
Okay.
So I guess that would be...
Before the CIF titles? When CIF titles?
No, so I came in right after.
Right after.
So they went to back-to-back CIF titles, lost one, won one. I come in, I think we lost in the quarters. And then my senior year, I think we lost in the second round of the quarters. You know, we had good teams and won the league and stuff like that. But we didn't have enough firepower per se, because those teams before were were really, really good. And we had good teams, but nothing off the charts.
Yeah. Who was your coach then?
So Joshua Kendrick was my coach, who, you know, another one that was kind of a lifer per se at Hillcrest Christian. And, you know, again, kind of a really a neighborhood team. I mean, that's really what these were, and found success with that. And I think Coach Kendrick would tell you, you know, it wasn't like get the ball out and run. I think when the opportunities were there, but it was like slow it down, run a play, play good defense, you know, trap when necessary. So very fundamental, kind of a slow it down, I would say. We weren't like getting up and down. But then again, it's not exactly like we had the athletes to get up and down at Hillcrest Christian. So it makes a lot of sense. And you know, and to piggyback a little bit off what you were talking about, when kids are watching their parents, they, you know, like, hey, man, you're always influencing your kids. And so coaches are like that too.
Yes.
The way you coach, the way you instruct, the way you even, I'm even thinking of times a coach might walk into a gym with his team for a tournament. The way you interact with the lady, you're asking, where's our locker room? The way you're at, the way you're talking to the custodian that might be like your person that tournament, you know, hey coach, I'm anything you need, I'm your guy. Just all that stuff is watched. It is. And so Coach Kendrick absolutely always treated everybody with respect, always was super nice. And that he was like a father figure to me. No question, just in regards to how to conduct himself and all that stuff. And then the competitive spirit. Then there were times where he would, the 1%, you'd see red. And I just always felt like when it was necessary, he would get fired up on behalf of his team, or he felt like, hey, something's wrong here. I need to stick up for my team. And so he'd lay into a ref or something. name one coach that's never laid into a ref before. So
right.
All that to say, just examples of observing people that you look up to.
No, that's awesome, man. And it seems like you had a lot of mentors, right, along the way, right? Father living in London.
Yes.
And then you, like, God put you in the position to have some good mentors, right? Yes. Some people to stand in that gap. And so has that been consistent through pretty much your whole childhood?
Absolutely. So I could name them all. I had Kemo Atkins in junior high. And then at Crespi, actually, Dick Dornan at Crespi was the head coach there. I mean, my experience with Dick Dornan was awesome. I learned so much under his program at Crespi. Then actually the soccer coach at Crespi was a guy who's still there named Rob Kadama, who is amazing. Rob Kadama is fantastic. Then I go to Hillcrest, it's Joshua Kendrick. And actually, a lot of people don't know this, my junior year, Joshua Kendrick's assistant coach was a man named Dean Bradshaw.
Whoa.
So Dean Bradshaw and Coach Kendrick were kind of co-coaches.
Yeah.
So Dean Bradshaw was done at Simi Valley and got close with Dudley Rutherford. And I think Dudley was like, hey, man, our team at Hillcrest could really need some coaching help. Dallas was a sophomore on that team at that time. So, yeah, Dean Bradshaw coached me my junior year with Coach Kendrick.
Wow.
And then Dean Bradshaw left and Coach Kendrick was my coach my senior year. So some really good role models there. And then I went to Masters College for a year and redshirted for a year. And the coach was Chuck Martin. Assistant coach was Chris Connolly. All guys, Chuck Martin, not so much, but Chris Connolly, someone I still keep in contact with, huge influence on me. And in a different way, I was a preferred walk-on. I didn't play. I redshirted. It was notorious. Coach Connolly did not like walk-ons. He thought they were a waste of space. He didn't feel that they would contribute to anything. So I had to kind of earn his respect. Like, hey, man, I can play a little bit.
Right.
And I think I did. And that actually, and then there were times where I felt like I earned that respect. So that helped me. And then the coach that I love that was at my wedding, Remy McCarthy, Moore Park College. And so anyone that knows about junior college basketball for the last 25, 30 years, and especially in Southern California, knows Remy McCarthy at Moore Park College. Had a great career there, 2-year starter, played a ton. Our teams were okay, like 500 teams. We didn't have great teams, but the thing I learned the most with Coach McCarthy was being raised by a single mom. There was a lot of coddling going on. And so there were times where I felt like I might've gotten bailed out too soon on some things.
Yeah.
And I think it impacted the way I was, like how good I was of a student in school, things like that. But Coach McCarthy, not happening, no cutting corners. And thankfully I felt like I actually matured enough at that time of my life where I felt like I needed that kind of coaching.
Yeah.
Coach McCarthy, for sure, good players have come through his program and have not lasted because the headbutting or the my way or the highway type coaches.
It's accountability, but he's shaping you for life, not just basketball. 100%.
And Coach McCarthy's, you know, we're talking about just verbal, just cuss words, left, right, and center. Love you, Coach. But that was the experience, and he's not going to shy away from that. But I needed that. I needed that. No corners. Show up on time. There will be consequences. And, 2 years of that molded me big time. And then, I went to Springfield College, where I didn't end up playing basketball. And that was the Lord at work, man.
What happened that you didn't?
So I was supposed to. Again, I didn't know the rules. I didn't know the rules. I didn't know what eligibility. I knew what eligibility meant, the word, but I didn't know how it's computed.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated high school, I already told you I was super young. So I graduate high school. I'm 17 years old, and I knew I wanted to play college basketball, but I felt like I needed time. So I go to College of the Canyons. I don't play any basketball.
Fully enrolled, though.
Fully enrolled, 3 semesters. 12 units for 3 semesters. Man. So right there, 3 of my 10 semesters you're allowed to play, gone. So then I go to Masters. There's 2 more semesters. Then I go to Moore Park for 2 years. That's 4 more semesters. So by the time I go to Springfield College, I have half of a semester left of eligibility. Here's the kicker. Moore Park College signed out all the eligibility tracers and sent to Springfield College. He's got 2 years of eligibility left. So I tried to appeal it with the NCAA and it got denied because it wasn't my, I don't know. It is not a student athlete's responsibility to keep track of their eligibility. That's a fact.
That is a fact.
So I got a little misled there from different people in admissions throughout the whole process. But nevertheless, I'll never forget actually telling my buddy Dallas, hey man, I'm out here. I'm a month into school. I've been working with the team. I love it, but they just told me I can't play. I'm not eligible. And I'll never forget him going, man, that's a long ways to go to find that out. So yeah, Springfield College is in Massachusetts.
Yep.
SoCal born, raised, out to Springfield, Mass, where it gets cold and snowy. And now I got no basketball. And, but that's okay, man. The Lord had different plans. And so I just diverted all my time into broadcast journalism, student journalism, print journalism, writing, broadcasting, radio. I did everything. I was radio president of the radio club for 2 years, play-by-play for the basketball team. I would travel with the team. I dove in.
2 questions about that.
Yeah.
One, what was the toughest part in your career of basketball, or the toughest thing you had to deal with?
Yeah.
Or was that it, you know, not being able to play? And 2, when did you know? Let's answer that one first. Next one is that, when did you know you wanted to be a sports broadcaster? But
yeah, so the basketball thing, it's funny. I had like a piece about it. The one thing that bothers me still and kind of bothered me, my appeal opinion, when I went to go appeal to the NCAA, like, hey, here's some facts. It's not my responsibility. Here's a tracer from another accredited college telling me I've got to. Springfield College takes that tracer and goes, okay, he's good to go. Let's go. Let's get him on. Okay. Right. So, you know, my point being is my appeal was, don't give me another 2 years. I'm not trying to get the 2 years back.
Right.
Either grant me one extra semester so I can play one more year. So I'm not asking for the 2.
Right.
Just give me the ability to play one last season. It's Division 3 basketball. And if you go read their mission statement, it's nothing like Division 1 or Division 2.
Right.
Division 3 athletics is like whipped cream on top. You go to a school because you want to study something. You're trying to experience something else, whether it be getting away from home or whatever you're studying. And then the football, the hoops, the baseball, whatever, that's like whipped cream on top. It's still very serious, but it's not scholarship stuff.
Yeah.
So I take that statement and I go, just give me one more year because that's what I'm trying to fulfill here. And they wouldn't give it to me. So the hardest part about that whole process was learning that I had to give up basketball, not on my terms. And so now I would say it's a little better than like injuries. So injury is I got to stop playing, and it didn't happen on my terms. That is got to be a tough pill to swallow. Yeah. And I never had to deal with that. So I wouldn't say it's as bad as that.
Yeah.
However, it's a little bit,
it's different.
Right in the neighborhood where you have to go far away from home and friends and family.
Man.
And to learn that, oh man, you know, that was tough, man. But that basically it all ending on terms that were not my own was very difficult.
What advice would you give kids and parents as far as making sure eligibility is checked at a young age and understanding that whole process?
Talk to your high school coach. I mean, every high school coach at least knows the basics, the absolute basics. Division one, it's a clock. From this date to this date, that's what you have to play. Mm-hmm. Boom. Lower levels, excuse me, it's 10 semesters. That's why you see these crazy stories in Division three where it's like 71-year-old Bill Rafferty like coming back to play baseball. And it's because you have 10 academic semesters, however you want to break them up or do them, to play 8 athletic semesters. That's what it is. 10 semesters. It's just like high school. There's 8 semesters in 4 years.
Right.
That's how many semesters you have to play athletics. So I would just, if I just learned that earlier, I think I would have been better off. It's not necessarily something I learned until I learned it the hard way.
Right. Man. And it's for somebody else. It's for this moment.
Yeah,
to tell other
absolutely.
People and share it to make
absolutely.
Sure other people don't run into
if
that.
If college is a goal of yours, because I could have still done my path, but maybe at COC, do eight units.
Right.
11 units.
That's it.
That's it. That was the difference. Just do something part-time.
So something very similar happened to me where I was at a junior college, left mid-semester because the coach hated me, but really I just didn't understand once again. Right?
Okay.
Whatever, which way. And then I enrolled in school that January full-time.
Okay.
Did 3 semesters, got back, and now my eligibility.
Yeah, that's
well.
It. So it's gone.
That's why I do what I do is like my parents didn't have that information. I didn't have that information. Like that should be the standard is like, hey, if you're an athlete, here you go about eligibility. Yeah, you should know these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Stay out of the eligibility. Yeah, or stay out of 12 units. You know, if you're not trying to play, stay out of the 12 units. But hey.
So once again, stepping on your perseverance and taking the optimistic approach just to life, man, is you hop right into sports broadcasting and journalism and the media side of everything. When did you know that you wanted to do that?
So I knew I wanted to be in media. I'll know Tim Cates, another, you know, you're talking about these male figures that have really either evoked confidence in me or told me, hey, man, you're actually pretty good at this. You might want to stick with this, whether it be a basketball coach or just other people like a Tim Cates. So Tim Cates has been at Fox Sports for forever, and he's the executive producer of Petros and Money, the 570 or 540. I forgot the name of that station now, but it's one of the more popular drive time afternoon radio shows. And Tim Cates at the time was producing a show called Into the Night with Tony Bruno. I don't know if that name rings.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Isabel. Yeah. So I did an internship with Fox Sports Radio, and Tim Cates was the producer and kind of oversaw my duties. And that was in 2010, I think, 2009, 2010. And he just taught me so much about not just the radio, but just how sports media works and how it's serious, but there's a level of seriousness and casualness. And if you can merge them, you might actually be pretty good.
Right.
And that could be a good segue into breakfast burritos. We'll get to it in a second. But that's always been my philosophy, man. And I learned that from Tim Cates. He probably doesn't even know it, but it's kind of just that's if you listen to Petros and Money and Petros Papadakis, like the guy's cracking jokes. It's not that serious. You get to what you need to because people want to hear the sports.
Yes.
But it's not all percentages, numbers, stats. It's boring.
Yeah.
So it's like, take your job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. You know, kind of like a Shaquille O'Neal, right? The guy's constantly goofing around, but you know, in between the lines, he's going to try and kill you, right?
Yes.
Okay, same thing. So that philosophy for me was something I learned at Fox Sports Radio, and I knew to myself, okay, I want to do this. And literally since 2010, 2009, that I have been on a journey to be in sports media, and I'm very, very, very lucky to say I'm doing it.
Right. Yeah. Well, when you set your mind on something and you have the work ethic that you have, it tends to happen.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Just for everybody out there, I think you know, just so a man thinketh. So he,
yeah,
so he
absolutely. Does it. And it takes, it's you know, you're going to have your peaks and your valleys, and but there's no question. It takes the ball has to bounce your way a little bit sometimes. There's no question. I wouldn't say here and just, yep, I worked hard and I got it. No. There were a couple conversations had or a couple lucky breaks that have to go your way. A little bit of luck. Anyone that tells you luck has nothing to do with it, I think is being, I think that's overly optimistic. You know, the Lord has his will. That's for sure. But man, there's got to be a percent or two of luck. Just a, you know, you know, those recipes where it's like a pinch of salt. Stop. There's always
a favor, right? You call it, and but it's also because God gives us free will.
Yes, he does.
And our measure of faith is our currency, man. When we put our faith in,
amen,
that's what tends to happen. It's core prep for me. It's sports media for you. It's basketball for these kids that are playing basketball. They're putting their faith in something, putting the effort forward the right way and doing all the right things, meeting the right people, making mistakes along the way.
Of course.
But getting back up, dusting themselves off and like, oh no, I'm still, my goal is still to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you continue to do. It's been 10 years now.
So yeah, this is my ninth year doing sports media since 2010, kind of like on a student, like amateur side. And then I got hired by the Daily News in 2015. So yeah, so since 2015, I've been a professional media member. Yes.
But you started years ago. It's almost 13 years ago, 14 years ago.
Yeah, then. Exactly.
What's the difference from TARC 2010 to TARC 2023?
Well, I think what I always, and I've been lucky enough to, I went to Crespi Career Day. I've been to Sierra Canyon. I've been to different schools and even back at Springfield College to talk with budding student journalists and media, you know, kids that want to get into media. And I always tell them what I was doing in 2010, 11, 12, 13, before I got to the Daily News was you have to think of this is one of my favorite analogies that I make. In basketball, when you're working on your shot and you're in an empty gym, I'll ask the rhetorical question. Do any of the shots you make in an empty gym count in the game? Absolutely. No. When you're working on your handle, like, is that a highlight tape? No. You're doing all the work. I wouldn't even say behind closed doors. It's reps. They are reps that are making you better. They don't count. Mm. They don't count, but they're necessary. They are prerequisites for getting better, doing anything of quality. So I tell these kids, the problem nowadays is everyone thinks that if they create something, it has to be viral.
Yeah.
It's got to be viral. If it doesn't have enough views or clicks or likes, it's not good.
They delete it.
I would, exactly. And I'll tell, like, okay, so if you're in a gym and you're working on your game, do you just, when you miss a shot, is that not still trying to get better? I'm trying to correlate. You still have to fail, yes, even when you're working out, because that's what's going to make you better. You have to work on things you're not good at. So I always tell these young kids, make a blog, do a podcast, make a YouTube show, whatever it is, try and do it as many times as you can, not with the intention to create eyeballs, but with the intention that you're working on your craft, yeah, just like a guy running routes on an open field by himself with his buddy throwing wounded ducks. You know, it's, yeah, like whatever the case may be, you know, your 11-year-old cousin's going to rebound for you in the gym. You're getting shots up. It's the same premise, yeah, so that when the time comes, when you need to deliver something, like maybe at crunch time of a basketball game, or, hey, actually, you know, our student broadcast wants to do a football game on Friday nights. We're looking for a play-by-play or a color guy. Can you do it? And you're like, yeah, I've been doing podcasts and speaking on Instagram or whatever the case, yes, may be. I actually might be more ready for this opportunity. And so it's the same thing, man, trying to create opportunities to sharpen your tools.
Yes.
It's the same thing as sports. That's what I tell all these kids. So at Springfield College and all through those years up until Daily News, that's what I was doing. I had my own blog called Road to Radio. I was doing podcasts. I was doing radio shows. I was calling basketball games. I'll never forget my first assignment for the Springfield College student newspaper was a women's field hockey game. They said, who wants to do women's field hockey? And everyone was like, and I was like, I'll do it.
I don't even know what field hockey is.
Oh, dude, it's like stick, wood. It's a whole thing. Exactly. Exactly. You're making my point.
Yes.
Exactly. And I just say, like, hey, raise your hand at everything. Don't ever think you're too good for something. Yeah. Don't ever think that something won't make you better. Go do it. Go learn.
Be the fill-in when there's
absolutely, absolutely. Be, yeah, exactly. Be when the girls are trying out and they need an extra. Be the fill-in. But yeah, man, that's kind of been the ethos of my approach. Todd, I've never chased the dollar, dude, ever.
Yeah.
I've never chased the dollar. I've always chased the passion, the fun, what I want to do. And through that, I can now, I've created a nice, comfortable life for myself. Yeah. The money has come, which allows me to provide for my family. Cause that's important. You have to have those things. You can't just work for free. That's not what I'm saying. But when you put the emphasis on your passion, what you're working towards, like all the other stuff will come.
Yes. No, you became an expert at what you do. And that's what kids miss, right? They want to become the things that you get from being the expert.
Yep.
Rather than actually being the expert. And you see it in basketball all the time, right? They've mastered a dunk, a crossover or something, but not the work ethic that it takes to actually be a pro. Like I tell kids all the time, do you know what a pro does?
Yeah.
Come and watch a real pro workout to understand what they do to get there. Cause you, what you're doing, just cause you're good in eighth grade.
Yeah.
You're not gonna cut it, kid.
Yeah.
And give them the tools though, to understand, hey, this is what you actually have to sleep right. Nutrition, hydration.
Oh yeah. Take care of your body.
Your relationships, your circle is super important. And I think that's the highlight of a lot of what you're saying is, man, you had a good circle around you.
I was very lucky.
Yeah. And did you seek any of those relationships out personally, or did it kind of just happen?
No, I would say yes and no. I would say most of them just happened, and I was lucky because I can't think of anything. I can't think of a circumstance I was put in where I thought, okay, no, this isn't for me. I'm leaving. I felt like maybe I was just able to. Again, I maybe just had the perspective to take from the experience what I knew I needed. And that sounds really kind of like, whoa, what are you, like all knowing? No, I just know that when I got to Moore Park College and played for Remy McCarthy, and every third word is the F word or the S word, I just kind of learned like those words are just like fillers. It's basically the cliche, listen to the message, not the tone, or whatever the cliche.
Eat the fish, spit out the bone.
Yeah, yes, things like that, where it's like, I'm going to listen to what I think is going to help me.
Yes.
The cuss words are just, that's just part of it. That's just how he's teaching. I don't know, whatever. I don't need that. I'm not taking offense to that. And so I think along the way there were figures that allowed me to kind of just have a little more perspective on what I might've needed from that scenario.
Absolutely. So now you're here, you're at Daily News, right? You're starting your career. You're back in your home stomping grounds of LA in the Valley. What were you most excited about stepping into that?
I think I just thought to myself, you know, it's funny. Okay, so 2015, so I'm, you know, my mid-20s, and I'm thinking, okay, this is it. This is the beginning. I'm thinking Ramona Shelburne used to be a Los Angeles Daily News prep writer.
Yeah.
Now she is the who's who on ESPN.
Yeah.
And Todd, I always believed in myself. I could be a one percenter. That's another thing I tell these media kids. The ESPNs, the Foxes, the Scott Van Pelts, the Skip Baylesses, the Colin Cowherds, the Joe Bucks of the world, they are one percenters. The ones making six figures, seven figures, one percenters.
Yeah.
And I always thought to myself, you know what? I can do that. I have the skills. I have the confidence. I'm going to go be a one percenter. So when I got hired by the Daily News, I'm like, yo, this is just the beginning. I'm going to be a high school writer. Then I'm going to go to college. Then I'm going to go to pro. And I'm going to be like Stephen A. Smith. Like, watch me go.
Yep.
Still doing high schools. but because things in my life changed.
Yes.
And what I wanted changed. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in a second. But to answer your question, Daily News, I got hired. I'm writing for Los Angeles Daily News, a credible, notable newspaper here in Southern California, maybe even the West Coast region. It's not quite a national paper. It's not the LA Times, but that's right. Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to do my best on this beat. I'm going to serve a community. That's Journalism 101. That's 99% of journalism. I'm talking about the 1% on TV making millions. The 99% is local community journalism, right, writing impact pieces, feature stories, stuff like that. And I wouldn't even consider myself, I never consider myself a journalist. And that sounds really, people go, well, you are. I said, I guess technically I am. I'm a sports reporter. Yeah. The real journalists are the guys in Gaza right now dealing with what's going on with the Israelis and the Palestinians. Those are journalists. An untold story speaking on behalf of someone that doesn't have a voice because there's a wrongdoing. That's journalism.
Yeah.
I'm going to Heritage Christian versus Village and watching Tay Simmons dunk on people. Like, that is fun. That's right. I'm reporting. Yeah. And every so often, I would say there are times where I do journalism, where yes, I'll write a piece that is journalistic. Yeah. I just got done writing a story about El Camino Real and what's going on over at that school and so on. Mm-hmm. That's an example of journalism. So every so often I tip my, you know, I put my toe in the proverbial pool of journalism and think, okay, that was journalism, Tark. Good job. But then I go right back into the field of work that is sports reporting and news and who's good, who's bad, so on and so forth.
What is your job description? This is for the people, right?
Right.
A normal parent whose kid plays on a basketball team at a school in the Valley. They think you just write on Twitter and
yeah,
only kids that you like and only coaches maybe that you have relationships
sure
with. What is your job as a media writer?
So as a high school sports reporter, my job is to, people think that my job is to always write on the best kids. And there is a truth to that, because when you think about the reader or the consumer, what is it they're interested in? So unfortunately, I said that purposely. Unfortunately, the readership can dictate coverage. Yeah. So for example, I covered Bronny James and Sierra Canyon for 4 years. Okay. I broke national news on that stuff. Tarek, why are you always writing about Sierra Canyon? Why are you always writing about Bronny? Why no. First of all, for a nice window there, they were the best high school basketball team in California.
Right.
That's a reason to cover them. Right. And readers want to know about Sierra Canyon. They want to know about Bronny. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, that's my beat. Them being in my area of coverage, it is my job to write about that. So sorry, there's going to be something on Sierra Canyon once or twice a week. That's just the nature of the job.
Yeah.
So that's an example of why people go, well, oh, you're just like writing about Sierra Canyon because you think it's cool. No, it's because that's what's getting read the most. Yes. And the bosses want to see... They do. They want to see clicks. They want to see consumption of content. And so that's an example. That's one example. But mm-hmm, on a macro level, it is trying to highlight and tell stories of high school athletes, both boys and girls. Unfortunately, I'm one person covering now with SB Live. I cover all of the Southern section and all of the City section. So for parents out there,
what sports?
All of them. Whoa. So myself and Eric Sonheimer, LA Times, we are one person covering the whole section, the whole Southern section and the whole City section. And so they go, well, how do you do that? The answer is you don't. It's impossible. There's more than 550 schools in the Southern section. I think there's like 200 schools in the City section. So you're talking like 700 schools that we're supposed to cover. It doesn't exist. You have to – football, basketball, baseball, track and field, girls volleyball, girls softball, girls hoops. Those are the big time sports that I try and cover the most extensive, whether it be telling stories, writing features, writing game coverage, things like that, rankings, things of that nature. And then every so often, if we have a standout water polo player or yeah, cross country runner,
yeah,
here's the truth, mom and dad, your water polo player, as great as they are, their cross country runner, as great as they are, here's a little truth on this podcast. I could write up the greatest piece of journalism, not a lot of people care. And I hate to say that. It doesn't move the needle. And unfortunately, when I'm one person covering so much, you kind of have to be particular about what you're going to spend your time on.
Yes.
So if I spend 3 days on this great feature on an underwater basket weaver, you know, my boss will be like, hey man, great piece, but you know, there's not a lot of return on investment on here. And every so often, it's not always about that. So you have yeah, to pick and choose when it's like, right, this needs to be written because it's important. And it doesn't matter what it does on the click side or what it does on the digestion side, per se. So there are, but those are anomalies. Right. Those are anomalies. So yeah, man, I could go on and on. I can't tell you how many DMs I get. You know, little Johnny is the best point guard on our JV team. Come out and watch him. Ma'am, I don't cover JV sports. You know, anyway, so
JV parents kill me. They JV is junior varsity.
Yeah.
It is a development time.
It's exactly right.
And allow them to develop.
Yeah.
And when they make varsity, they'll have their opportunity.
They will have their opportunity.
You will, like you said, you have to report the real news that people are going to read and newsworthy.
Correct.
So when there's somebody who is newsworthy, they will end up in your feed.
And the truth of the matter is, I try and tell coaches all the time and parents too, like, hey, send me scores. Send me scores and the notable. So, okay, Modern Day 75, St. John Bosco 70. And then if it's the Modern Day coach coaching me, texting me, I'll usually get like two or three names, 23 points, 10 rebounds, 17 points, 8 assists, you know, 11 points, 11 rebounds. And then that's what I go and report. What a lot of times parents do is they'll go, hey, why are you only mentioning these players? Well, those are the players that are scoring every game. You know, it's kind of really simple, but I also get it. Like, hey, my son scored 7 points. If that coach would have put in the text, so-and-so scored 7 points, it might get in there. Yeah. It might not. Right. And that's where I always tell coaches, if you're getting pressure from parents, because some coaches go, hey, Tariq, I'm getting a lot of pressure from parents on the stats I send you. I said, I got a fix for that. It's really easy. Send me the whole box score.
Right.
So now you're off the hook and it's on me what I choose to then report. And they're like, oh, I like that. So basically blame me.
Yep.
I'll have those conversations all day long. You're 2 points, little Johnny. It's not going to get in. Now you go and go for 20. We have a discussion.
Right. Oh, man. Hilarious.
No, it's a story as old as time.
Yes. Now media cover. So that's your job description. The area you cover, all of Southern Section, all of City Section. I'm losing. There was something else. Sorry.
No rush.
Yeah. What was it? There was another piece to this, the media side. I blanked. Totally blanked.
No, you're good.
So you have, you could press play. All right. So you have all of Southern California to cover. Which is like ridiculously.
I want to be a little more clear because I don't want to get not that that's wrong, but it's all of the Southern section.
Southern section.
The San Diego section is
right,
people always get confused. That is part of Southern California, but I don't cover teams from San Diego. It's the Southern section and the City section.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Southern section and City section. Who gives you all these tips when you break news?
Ooh.
Who does it come from?
You know. One of the reasons people kind of make fun of me sometimes because I'll go to football games on Friday nights. Okay, let's not even – I know where this is basketball, but let me use football for example because I think it'll shed light without talking about basketball specifically. Football games start at 7 o'clock. I roll up to games at like 4:30, 5 o'clock max. I'm there usually 4 to 4:30, 5 o'clock, maybe something's going on. I show up at 5 o'clock, maybe bad traffic or something. Here's why. The job – presence is a large part of media coverage, in my opinion. So for example, Todd, you know, I do rankings. I evaluate players, not like scouting, but hey, here are the top shooting guards or here are the top wide receivers or quarterbacks. I forgot we're talking about football. Here are the top quarterbacks to watch. And I have to evaluate who there's 500 schools. I'm not going to list off 500 starting quarterbacks, but I can list off 20. So I have to quantify who are the most notable and the best, okay? I can't do that without showing my face. I have to show people I'm at games. I'm in the community. I'm not just sitting at home keyboard warrioring this thing. Oh, I watched a couple YouTube highlights. This is the best guy. No. I'm at games. I sit at tournaments. All that thing, all that. I keep diving into basketball. I'm trying to stay
You're
on football.
You're a hooper. It's okay.
I know.
That's why we have the show.
I know. But the example I'm trying to give for football is, and to answer your question specifically, I wanted to kind of preamble. Going to stuff is important, and this is where I get my tips. Most of them is because you show up a little early, and there's a lull. The players aren't quite out on the field or out on the basketball court yet. I'm chilling, but. Auntie or uncle or mom or dad. Hey, Mr. Fattel, or Tarek. Oh, hey, thanks for coming. And next thing you know, there is this time where approachability, which I take a lot of pride in, by the way, if I'm working and someone taps me on the shoulder to say hello, I take a lot of, that's very flattering to me. That means that I'm approachable. Even when I'm working, someone feels comfortable enough to come up and say hello. I always make sure to say, thank you for coming to say hello. That's really, really important. Not all media members, I won't say names, are not like that.
Right.
So, but the approachability level is at an all-time high 2 hours before tip, 2.5 hours before kickoff. So that's when I sit around, I'll do other work. I don't just sit around. I'll do other work while I'm waiting and someone will come up and say hello to me. Hey, and next thing you know, you get someone that cannot wait to show off their knowledge to you. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, I had no idea. And so sometimes it's like, wow, I really didn't know that. Sometimes it's like, I already know.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is it's a little bit of a game. Like, wow, you know, that's interesting. Tell me more. And so what happens is you get information, and the difference between what I believe myself, Eric Sonheimer, Steve Fryer at Orange County, Fred Robledo, Singer, these high school writers that are really credible and really good at what they do, they get information, and now all it is a sniff in the right direction.
Right.
It's not fact, and it shouldn't be taken as such. Unless you can see it with your own two eyes, anything you hear is not fact. You have to that's the approach. I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying I don't digest it as fact. So when you get told, hey, so-and-so, Todd Wilson's going to transfer. You might want to check on that. All right, I think I will. That's when you call coach and go, coach, I'm hearing. I'm coming to you. I'm forthcoming. Yep. This is what always works. It's just the truth because coaches appreciate it. Coach, I'm hearing Todd Wilson, your guard, is going to transfer. I'm hearing your Todd Wilson, the quarterback, he's going to transfer. What's going on? Have you been talking to the family? Yeah, he's on the move. Or coach, yeah, coach, we're getting a transfer, but the paperwork's not quite done, Tarek. Can you give me another day?
Right.
You got it, coach. No problem. However, this is all I always, however, I will wait because I think it's better to wait and have a better relationship.
Yes.
Then to basically, you just told me the kid's coming and for me to just go out there and slap it on Twitter or write a story about it. And now you're upset. You might not answer my calls. Right. I'm willing to lose on some of those because the relationship, there's far more to gain down the road.
It's so like you said, you're serving a community. And so your service is gone if you're doing something out of order or, you know, how they feel slighted.
Exactly. So I think a transparent conversation, coach, look. So most of the time coaches will go, okay, let's basically you work together on coaches. So once you get information, you start calling the right people, you try and confirm it. Most of the time the information comes from parents. It comes from family members. It comes from uncle. It comes from assistant coaches, things like that. And it's my job to then go confirm that with the powers that be and then work with the powers that be to make sure that when I break the news or whatever gets put out there, you're comfortable with it. And then if we're good, we're good. However, this is the one thing that some ADs are learning and some coaches learn. The last tidbit is, okay, coach, I can wait, but journalism and sports and news, it's like a train. It's going to leave the station whether you're on that bad boy or not.
Yeah.
It's choot, choot. It's leaving the station. So we can either work together and you're on the train and we're on our merrily way, or I'm pulling out and you're not on the train. So if something else happens where our agreement is now broken, I'm free to do whatever I want.
Right. If somebody else reports it.
Someone could scoop it or news gets out. And, you know, and that has happened. And that's because the coach knows I don't need if you're going to confirm information for me and I have enough. Sometimes the conversation is this, Todd. I've got paperwork, a photo. I've got player and parent telling me this is what's happening. I'm just like, let's say it's for those four things. Right. I'm still going to call the coach out of courtesy and go, hey coach, this is what I've got. This train is leaving. So you can either confirm it with me and we'll kind of, and it's more of a heads up that this news is coming, or that's basically your only option because right. I got enough.
That or that.
Yeah. I've got enough because I don't need you really. I'm just trying to be nice and I'm trying to do this the right way. And so some coaches will kind of huff and puff about that. And I think sometimes There are moments where I upset a coach because I have to do my job. However, I always believe the respect is still there.
Yeah.
So that happens too, where you got someone just, I'm just doing my job, and it makes a coach upset because that's not news he wanted out there, or makes player upset. But, you know, there's a respect level there still.
So for those coaches who have a respect level, or maybe someone that you have upset in the past, you don't have to use names, of course. Is there someone like at a high level school or where you are doing reporting on them all the time, but you don't even have that relationship with the coach?
No, thankfully I do not. That there is no coach in my 9 years now where I cannot call, or I feel like they're not going to pick up the phone. Or now there have been seasons where a coach might begrudgingly text me back or call me back because things are of high tension or high pressure situations. And is so-and-so going to play? Is so-and-so transferring in? Oh, you know, that kind of thing. But there's agreements with some coaches. Tarek, I understand you have to do your job. And if you have enough information, just give me a heads up. That's all I ask. And I go, okay, you got it. I will always text you or call you. This is happening. And I'm publishing this thing tomorrow. So. And some coaches, so for some programs, that heads up is really important because it can help them prepare. Like they'll tell their parents something's going to happen, or there's a they can dull down the reaction factor if some the powers that be or their parents or what have you kind of know ahead of time. You know, SB Live or the Daily News or the LA Times is going to have an article tomorrow. This is what it's going to be about. Be prepared for that, you know, okay, you know, and so coaches tend to be okay with that.
Man, a lot of great information. I think a lot of people see the media as, like you said, just reporting, but there's a lot more care, responsibility, action to what you do. And so I think it's great just for people who do follow you and listen to you to hear this side of it. Like, what you actually have to do, the work that you do behind the scenes, and, you know, to let you know if they want you to break news, just tell, you know, show up to the game 2 hours early.
I'll share one more thing that's really important. Sometimes there are stories that I'm working on and coaches don't want to talk to the media. And I would say player, parent, coach, I'm looking in the camera and I'm not being subjective because I'm a media member. That is bad. That is not the right way to go. Because what happens is when media is on a story and there's enough to run the story, it always makes it a better story if I have every point of view on the record included in the story.
Right.
So when someone reads it, they can read it from all angles, an objective story, and then make their own conclusion. That is the job of a reporter. Here are the facts. That's how it should be. You know, life in 2023 is a little different with regards to how much information out there and how misinformation and how media members and journalism, you know, you have like entities that don't go through this process. That's right. What I'm trying to get at. Yeah. And so every process for me, at least, is get as much information on one piece of paper per se on an article, get it out there, let the reader decide for themselves. However, there are times where I'm calling coach. He's not answering. He's not picking up. He's avoiding me. Well, what happens is the train analogy. Well, this thing's going to publish whether you're in it or not.
Right.
And so I would always encourage people to speak to the media because your voice will be in the story. You don't want a story written about you or your program without your voice in it. Now I can write whatever I want. Now I'm not saying I'm going to write my opinion in it and bash you, but if there's a story and your piece is not, you know, what you have to say, your angle is not in there, now you have no voice. So I always recommend, hey, talk to the media and get your side of things in the story. 100%. Because if they're not in there, and you're not answering phone calls, well, then you have no one to blame but yourself.
100%. The other side of this, I think a lot of parents, especially younger ones going, where their kids younger going into high school, they believe that the media, your type of media reporting, sports reporting, helps with exposure and recruiting. And so what is your, you know, what's your take on how you help with recruiting and exposure in that area when it comes to, you know, getting college scholarships?
So it's a great question. There have been some pieces I've written. One example is a kid named Chase Martin. He played football at Thousand Oaks last year. I mean, this kid was unreal. Linebacker, running back, and like the epitome of a football player. And then you go out and see this kid. He's like 6'1", 220 pounds. I mean, he's like, this dude is a scholarship athlete. Which level? I don't know. There was another one at St. Francis, and I can't think of his name, a quarterback. But I would write these stories about these kids where it's like, hey, here, there are some football is a great example because in basketball, there's AAU. In football, right. There's really no, I mean, there's 7-on-7, but it's like, is that really football? I would argue no. You can show your skills, but you're not hitting anybody. So in football, you really just, you are only tasked with the season you can play.
Right.
So when you get an athlete that is doing everything they possibly can in their power, what more else can you want from them? So when I look at Chase Martin, for example, from Thousand Oaks last year, he's playing football games at the highest level, varsity football, at a good level, not like modern day or Bosco, but he's outstanding in those games. Double-digit tackles, running for 3 touchdowns. I mean, he's the best player on the field every time he plays. So I would go, it's an example, I went out and wrote a story on him, and I'm not at all taking credit, but I do think, I do know that football coaches, college football coaches, college football assistant coaches, they follow me, and they read coverage. And I think what it does is it doesn't necessarily, oh, wow, Tarek wrote about this kid, so I'm going to offer him a scholarship. No, that's not what I'm saying. It's, oh, hey, here are all these kids' accomplishments on one sheet of paper.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Recruiting, a recruiting report.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, let me, oh, wow, he made this many tackles. He ran for this many touchdowns. Oh, wow, they're 8-0. Oh, and he's like, oh, his GPA is 3.8. Things like that. So I think when there are pieces I write like that, more so like, hey, this player is under the radar. Maybe college coaches should be looking at him. I think there are moments where that does help. And I think, you know, Chase Martin ended up going to Boise State. Am I the reason he went to Boise State? Absolutely not. I take no credit for it. However, I do think I was able to provide him a little more exposure.
Yes.
That got his name a little more out there because he did not have a Boise State offer at the beginning of the year. And then towards the end of the year, he did start accumulating some offers. So there's plenty of stories like that.
Oh, that's awesome. And I, once again, I want to highlight that this kid had already done the work and was already producing results.
Exactly.
It wasn't built on hype.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of kids, especially in the basketball space, right, they want to be built on hype. I've literally had parents who've reached out to me and say, hey, can you send this to Tarek and media and post this? I'm like, he hasn't even played a high school game yet.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to build hype on something? Like, if he produces on the court, believe me, Tarek's going to know who he is.
Yep.
He's going to get posts about him. And I want the parents to trust the process and the training and development and the being a student athlete and the high GPA. Those are the things that are going to get you exposure. Those are the things that are going to get the media to cover you is the work at the end of the day.
The prime example right now, and I'm just, you know, I know we're creeping up on basketball season, but, you know, it's not bad to say we are recording this during football season right now, is St. John Bosco, the number one team in the country that just beat Modern Day 28-0. They've got a quarterback named Caleb Sanchez. Didn't start until this year. And he's out.
A senior?
Yes. Outstanding player. I just got done writing a story about how his loyalty and patience just got paid off because we got a kid that sat for 3 years, learned, developed, and did everything in his power to get himself ready to be a starting quarterback his senior year at St. John Bosco, the defending national high school football champions. Okay. And now they're the number one team in the country. This guy goes out on a Friday night and beats Modern Day 28-0.
Big time.
Now everyone's on Caleb Sanchez.
Wow.
Not only did he wait, and that endears coaches nowadays. I mean, wow, a loyal kid, a nice kid, a good family that stuck it out. I just wrote in the story I wrote, his mom and dad wanted him to transfer. They didn't like watching him not play. Man. Let's think about transferring. Caleb Sanchez says, no, I want to stay. And he got to reap all the rewards. And right now, I can guarantee you, he will be a scholarship player somewhere. And it's all because he just stayed the course. And of course, he has the talent.
Right.
You can't just stay the course, be a senior, and think, oh, well, where's my scholarship now? You got to be good. Yes. And that there's some truth to that.
Man, that's awesome to hear another story of someone staying somewhere, sticking with it, and their dreams coming true.
Absolutely.
In the last moment. And it's really, that's the start of his career, right? If he's Absolutely. A college level player in football, you have to stay for 3 years, right? You have to go and play in college, and then getting that free education and the opportunities that come after that, he's already prepared to do it again.
Yes, he
in
is.
College. And hear that, parents.
Like, yeah, no, it's
that's the route.
They should heed that message, because I'm telling you, what is so short-sighted about transferring over and over again. Now, we just, you know, I transferred in high school. I did, but the circumstances were different. I didn't transfer for basketball. I talked to you about how I came to Christ, and I just felt like Hillcrest Christian was better for me spiritually than Crespi Carmelite High School. And basketball was kind of the whipped cream on top. But a lot of, and transferring is not a bad thing. It's every circumstance is different. However, there are circumstances where the grass seems to always be greener every time you transfer. And I think it's so short-sighted, because if you really look at the development of your child's spirit, your child's mindset, man, that the waiting, the working, and that it paying off is going to be a life lesson that's going to serve your young person way more than transferring to another school just so they can throw touchdowns or average 20 points a game. Because in what world do you get to the business world or the professional world? I'm not talking about sports now. And you go up and you go, hey, boss, I don't like that corner cubicle. I want to move. I want to go to the window cubicle. That boss is going to go, yeah, get out of my office.
Right?
No one can just up and leave. It doesn't work like that. You've got to work for a promotion. You've got to work for the better office location, whatever the case may be. And so that's a lesson I think Caleb Sanchez at St. John Bosco was learning tenfold. And he might not even know it yet.
Right. Well, it sounded like he did, because his parents even wanted him to move. Mm-hmm. He understood something deeper inside of him that,
well, he had trust in the program. But yeah, no, it's you're nailing.
And that's
yes.
the thing. It depends on the program. It depends on the coach. It depends
no
on the
question.
Circumstance 100%. But like you're saying, if there's, you know, the grass isn't always green.
It isn't.
Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Your top four sports reporters of all time.
Remember, yeah.
My Rushmore, so yours.
Yeah. My Mount Rushmore of kind of sports personalities. I think the ones that come to mind are like Howard Cosell and Bob Costas and guys like that. But for me, the number, not in any particular order, I do think of Stephen A. Smith. I've always appreciated, not only, there are media members I think that are on there on TV or on radio, and I'm not even so sure they believe what they're saying.
They're
you know
just
what
talking.
I mean? It's just like I'm gonna have this take because it's gonna create conversations of and I get that's the nature of the business sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Stephen A. Smith has never done that, but I do believe that when he speaks, I do think he believes what he's saying. So when he has a hot take, I do believe like he thinks that.
Right.
So I like Stephen A. Smith, and I'm reading through his book, his life story, and just his family and where his humble beginnings and stuff. So I truly admire where he's gotten to from where he started. So Stephen A. Smith for sure. I think my radio idol growing up was Colin Cowherd.
Yeah.
So Colin Cowherd for me, big time, just his rants. And what I learned from him, actually, he has great analogies. So he'll be like, Dak Prescott is like a cup of coffee. You know, is it too hot? Is it cold? Do you put a little milk in it? You know, what are you going to get with Dak Prescott? But he can be, you know, he always comes up with ways. You could not be a sports fan, but if you're listening to one of his hits and he's using an analogy, it's so general. Anyone can go, oh, okay, I can relate to that, because he's analogies are just so good. Yeah. So love the analogy and the illustrations he uses. So we got Stephen A. Smith, Colin Cowherd. I think the other one for me might actually be Joe Buck. So okay. Joe Buck wouldn't be a media personality or a reporter or journalist. He's, I think, the best play-by-play guy out there.
Yeah.
And Joe Buck does Super Bowls. He does World Series. Another guy, I read his book, and that's a guy whose father, Jack Buck, was an legendary broadcaster for the St. Louis Cardinals and did World Series and stuff. So Joe Buck is a guy that is in broadcast and everyone just thinks he's there because of his dad. And you don't just do Super Bowls and World Series
just
because your last name is Buck. Like you clearly are good. Yeah. And I think you, when you get to a certain level, Todd, whatever genre or workspace you're in, when you get to a certain level, when you're at the top, people want to tear you down.
Yeah.
So every time I see hate on Joe Buck, that's just because he's the best. Yes. That's what being the best is.
100%.
And so I'm like, 100%. You're only saying he's the best by hating on him. It's the same thing I think with like LeBron. People want to tear down LeBron. Why? Well, you're putting him in that elk of conversation because he's the best.
He's that good.
And yes. I don't want to jump out of bounds here.
We could go debate, but go ahead.
So we got Colin Cowherd, Stephen A. Smith, Joe Buck.
Let me think.
There's a couple different ones, man. I can't think of a fourth guy, but I will say, I want to say Bill Plaschke. I'm going to go Bill Plaschke. And that people are going to be like, oh my gosh, why? Bill's columns are amazing.
Really?
And let me tell you why. Because he can say so much in a small amount of words. So when it comes to writing clear and concisely, he can say this much in this many words. Wow. And that's why his columns are so good. So
I like him from around the horn.
He's around the horn, but yeah, LA Times columnist. So he gets to write his opinion, which is, that is the ultimate job in sports media, especially for writing. Being able to write your opinion is probably one of the best positions you can have. You can go watch a game, go watch, Justin Herbert from the Chargers throw four interception, then you can just slam them the next day. And I'm not saying that's why you do it, but you can really, you have the credibility to write your opinion. And I always respect that. And I always say the columnists, the hardest part in my opinion, because I write high school's columns. I've written some really opinionated, edgy high school columns about transferring and things like that. And the biggest challenge with writing a column is you can't just write an opinion and not take accountability for it.
Yes.
So you have to be able to write it and then defend it.
Yes.
And that's what's important. So you write Bill Plaschke has the gumption and the cojones per se to write a column that is damning to a program, coach, or player, and then he'll show up to the press conference that week. It's not like you don't see him for the next 3 months.
No, we're going
to
talk about it.
Exactly. So he's willing to go face to face with controversial things, and I've always respected that. So let's throw Plaschke on there.
All right.
I love it.
So my four. So I don't have as much experience and in depth like research and understanding as you do, right? Mine are more just like the ones who jump off the screen that I just connected with. And so no order. Stuart Scott.
The injection
of hip hop into sports media for me was everything, man. And his just swagger and everything, legendary for me.
As cool as the other side of the pillow.
Exactly.
That was my favorite one. Yeah.
Exactly. And Stuart Scott, too, is actually on the Inside the NBA cast. They're all hilarious, right? Ernie.
Oh, yeah, Ernie Johnson.
Ernie Johnson just holds it down.
Yeah,
man.
He does.
He really keeps those guys.
Yeah.
As wild as they get, he keeps them. He keeps everything focused, and you still get the basketball, and he's the one just moderating everything. And the respect I have for him to be able to sit there between all the silliness.
Well, he's the epitome of a host. So his job is to get the show where it needs to go. So yes, he does a very good job. That's a lot of personalities to maintain. Man, yes. So.
And then, I don't know if this is going to count as one or both, but it's the third one on my mind. It's Max and Marcellus.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
Used to do radio on 710, man. Oh my gosh, man. I could listen to them all day long. Max is you actually remind me of Max a little bit.
Oh,
man.
I love Max Kellerman, man. And, very articulate dude.
Yes.
Ivy League educated guy, good with numbers, very smart. Yeah. He's close. He's not on my Mount Rushmore, but he's probably like in my top 10. I used to love that show. Great mix of kind of, and Marcellus Ivy League guy too.
Yep.
So exactly. Very, very high intellect show, but where they were able to kind of like casually present it to you. It was great. Yes. Great show.
No, absolutely. So yeah, that's my mountain actually is those four now. Okay. Max and Marcellus, because they were a show.
Okay.
We'll count them as one. The other one is actually Ramona Shelburne.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When she, it was just when, I don't know, I guess I got into just reading articles and dropping media, you know, free agency. And when she was doing the Lakers, like just the way she covered the Lakers, to me, it was just like, man, like she was on it. It was just the professional side of it. And
Ramona's great. I've gotten to know her over the last probably 5 or 6 years of my career, and super supportive and super, super friendly person. That's Ramona's the prime example of talking to people like they're human first.
Yeah.
And I've taken pride in that, Todd. And that's a really good person that you bring up is Ramona Shelburne, because I think even though you're still trying to do your job, you're dealing with people first. Yes. And so I'll talk, hey coach, how's your family doing? Hey coach, I saw this on Instagram. You know, how's your son doing in Pop Warner? You know, a lot of reporters aren't like that. It's right. Hey, I just want the information and okay, talk to you later. You know, so there have been coaches that I've gotten to know and actually become, you know, friends with over the decade of covering high school sports because of something like Ramona, where she's kind of like person first. Yeah. And then we're going to find a way where I can do my job as well. It's a dangerous game because if things go wrong, you have to do your job. But
right.
That's a great four. But it developed, four and a half. I don't know.
Yeah. Four shows or spaces. But I think what you're saying is so important just for life, man. And it's connecting with people because they're people. I saw Mike. This is when I moved back to California in 2007. And my best friend, we went to go eat. And he saw just how I was treating people. Mm. And it was actually wrong. It was very service-based. Like, I'm a huge customer service dude. Like, I hate going to restaurants and, like, customer service is bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But how I communicated that back at that time was probably, it was just the wrong way to, it wasn't reflective of my true character and who I really want to be. And he called me, he's like, dude, you're a jerk. Like, you're a straight a-hole to these people. He said, you're crazy. Like, you have to treat everybody with kindness. I don't care. Like,
sure.
Who did you become when you moved to Kansas? Like, sure. He like checked me. And I was like, whoa. And then I started watching him and how he like, there's a difference.
Yeah.
These are people. They're not a job that they do. Mm-hmm. And regardless of anything that goes on in our life and with the things that we want or whatever it is that, no, these are people first, man.
Absolutely.
So ask how you're doing. How's your day going? Just little stuff like that can carry you so far. And then when you do have to say, hey, like my fork or you got my order wrong. There's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. There's a little more care and
absolutely. And all that, yeah. So. Oh yeah. No, one of my go-to gripes with restaurants, and not necessarily a particular, but if I ever see something that's wrong, I always ask the manager, and I always say this. I say, sir or ma'am, I noticed this, and I think it would be a disservice to your restaurant and the way you are trying to do things if I didn't share with you my experience today. And it 10 out of 10 times gets an ear. Yeah. They want to hear that because they want to be better. But but then there's also those people that come in there and just yell and throw stuff, and that accomplishes zero.
Zero. No, it gets you on World Star Hip Hop or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
what are we doing?
All right. This is one more question for you.
Sure.
What is your perfect breakfast burrito?
Oh, man. You know, I've been on the journey to find the perfect breakfast burrito. I found some good ones out there. Before I go into my perfect one, I do want to explain there's two different burritos.
Yeah.
There's a million burritos, but two kind of genres of breakfast burritos. Okay. There is the all American style breakfast burrito, which is your base, like hash browns, eggs, sausage, bacon, cheese. Like imagine like an all American breakfast wrapped into a tortilla. Okay. Then there's the Mexican style breakfast burrito, which is generally with chorizo, salsa, cheese, you know, potatoes, things of that nature.
You're getting a good head shake from Korea.
Yeah.
That's her kind of burrito. Well,
listen, most people that didn't grow up on cheeseburgers and ketchup, they're going to be like, yeah, give me the Mexican style breakfast burrito. Right. But there are people out there that they're into the plain stuff. Hey, more power to them. I'm more of definitely the Mexican style breakfast burrito. So for me, chorizo has to be in there. But the difference is, if you're asking me for my perfect breakfast burrito, chorizo, potatoes that are crispy for texture, when you need a little crunch in there. I would even argue you can go hybrid. Okay, now you're asking for the perfect one. I'm gonna go chorizo and tater tots, because the tater tots give you that hot potato-y with the crunch, right? Got to get salsa in there. Got to get cheese. I think if you can maybe add some type of, like, there's one more crunch element. So whether it be, like, maybe, like, pepper or, like, scallions or, like, chili, like, something, a little, like, some kind of sprinkle, like, crisp in there,
yeah,
can generally get the job done. And I think a lot of detail is in the tortilla. So some people will just kind of just, yeah, like, cold tortilla, not even cold, but like room temperature tortilla, right, kind of out of the pack, right?
Out of the bag, yeah.
And just boom, 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 and it could be this great inside. But man, I need a little, like, throw it on the hot surface for a little bit, get a little warm, or maybe even throw it over an open flame to get a little, yeah, crisp on it. But for me, the chorizo has to be in the burrito. I got to give you one example. There's a super popular breakfast burrito place in Burbank called Corner Cottage. Everyone, yeah, raves about it. I went there and rated that thing like a 5.
Whoa.
Oh, I went the other way with it. It's basically like like scalloped potatoes in a burrito. It's super potato-y, super dry. People rave and rant about it.
Not for me. What's been your highest ranked burrito so far?
Of course, I have to give kudos to Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports. He does the pizza reviews. And so that's why I was like, huh, like, let me figure out something fun I can do. And it was during the pandemic. So real quick, this is the origin of the breakfast burrito reviews. We're during the pandemic. We're bored. Nothing's going on. I'm talking about the whole world. And my friend Aram Talegian, he just tweets out, like, there's no good breakfast burritos in this world. Like, there's just none. And I'm just like, you're crazy. Watch me go. So I started on this kind of journey to find good breakfast burrito reviews. And I was kind of just being funny.
Right.
But they create, it's like food and music, man. They're the two things for the most part that bring people together. It doesn't matter your color, creed, whatever, food, music, like, people can always find common denominator on those things. And so I was just so shocked at the fun dialogue that was created out of biting a breakfast burrito, showing the inside of it and saying what I thought of it and giving it a grade out of 10. And so, like Dave Portnoy, I don't think he's ever given a 10. That's okay. I wouldn't call it the secret sauce, but like, I've been a dunk contest judge. Right. I don't think I've ever given a 10 my whole, yeah, I'm that guy.
Oh, man.
A 10? Like, you're telling me, like, that's, to me, 10s are almost unachievable. That's like, a 10 is like, it's perfect. There's no such thing. So a kid would have to go crazy, or at least leave the 10s for like the final rounds or something.
Right, right, right.
There's guys like first dunk and he goes off the backboard. It's like 10. It's like, oh my gosh. So with the breakfast burrito, I don't think I've given anything over like a, I think I've given a 9.1, like a 9.3. Those, okay, are like my highest. So for me, a good breakfast burrito is anything above 7.5, and anything in the 8s is, yeah, really good. And there's probably about a handful or half a dozen of those. A lot of 6s and 7s, and then there's a few like 4 and 5, which are just like horrible.
Oh man, yeah,
yeah. You don't want to try any of those.
The one I suggested to you, Athenian Grill.
Oh, I think that was like a mid 7s.
Yeah, no, that
it might have been in a low 8.
Yeah, no, I think it was a 8.1 or something.
Athenian Grill was solid, and that actually funny you said that is that burrito, if I'm not mistaken, is more of an all-American style sausage,
yes,
egg. But there's a little bit of. There's like a little bit of.
I have,
like,
to try the Mexican. I'll be honest. I've never really done the Mexican style breakfast burrito, and I apologize. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I guess we're gonna have to cut this right now. No. yeah, man. I'll give you a couple spots. The chorizo, it's like you just can't go wrong. That's my opinion. So
what is chorizo? So
it's basically sausage. Oh, it's like it's like ground up sausage. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. But it's got a little spice to it. Oh. What people have issue with it is it can be a little greasy. So you can. It's a little messy.
Okay.
But
hey, that's what a breakfast burrito is.
It's flavor, man. Flavor, real flavor.
Awesome. All right, we're going to flip the script. This is the part of the show where you are the interviewer.
Yeah.
Now, two questions for me, anything in the world.
I think you are so involved in the youth of this game, that is basketball. What to you is the hardest part of not just teaching these kids, but trying to share with them that they do have to exude patience, that there's patience in this game, that we live in such a microwave society where little freshman Johnny and his parents think They should be the varsity starting point guard. And you're there going, hey, you need to work on X, Y, and Z, and time will allow you to get on the court. How do you have that conversation? What are some things you say to parents and players that so they can understand that that's what they're in for?
So at this point, I'm going to talk about where how it is at this point and where I started. At this point, I've done it so many times that I can show examples of kids who were patient and waited their time and distrusted the process, and kids who you wouldn't expect to be college level players that did become college level players, right? With my middle school program, I get them young and I'm teaching them the attributes, or, you know, the skills and the mindset they need to reach that goal. It's like, hey, you got to work every day. And they're in the gym with literally the top middle schoolers probably in the area. And so they see their competition every day and they know how much harder they're going or how much more work those other kids are doing. And so we surround them in an environment to see what does it look like to get to where you're going, and how, and it also shows them how much they can get better in an amount of time. There's like during the school year, right? There's 3 months. Every 3 months, you see this big jump in kids. Just every 3 months. And so that's what I show
in their game.
And oh yeah,
got 100%
it. In their game, their maturity, their physicality, especially in middle school, they're all hitting puberty.
Okay.
And so everything is jumping, right? So we'll take a Sky Clark. I have him in sixth grade. Super talented. He's actually kind of chubby at the time.
Sure.
He's tall as a 10-year-old. He can dribble. He can do a little, but he wasn't Sky Clark that we know, right? Seventh grade Sky Clark got taller.
Okay.
Got more
thinned out a little bit.
Got more fit, not athletic, not crazy athletic. Okay. I mean, he's athletic, but he hasn't woken up, right? His body hasn't woken up. Handles go crazy.
Okay.
He started working out with dribble too much and all these ball handling dudes. Handles are crazy.
Okay.
Eighth grade Sky Clark, dunking with two hands, has every move in the book, plays a defender, like plays defense. And so you see even these high level kids, man, look how much they've improved over time to get where they're at.
Okay.
Right. And so now I just say, hey, look at Sky. This is what he did. I literally have Sky's report from seventh grade.
Little photo of him, like
not even a photo. Oh. It's actually his blueprint.
Okay.
It was me and his dad went over. Hey, we want Sky to be Team USA. We want him to play in the EYBL. This is the school he wants to go to. Now, most of it happened in high school. He got invited to every single camp that we had written down. He got every college offer that he really wanted. Now, you know, COVID happened, things changed, moved to Tennessee, all this other stuff. Still his plan worked out. I'm like, look, we wrote it on paper. And then I showed them what they have to do to get there and give the parents the education to understand what the process looks like. I've been able to work with NBA players. I asked them, hey, what did you do? Oh, this is what I did. I have the blueprint for you to get to where you're going to go. So now I just show examples of kids who've done it, and they kind of just listen.
So it just speaks for itself.
And I say, they get in the gym with me. Hey, I'm in the gym at 6 a.m. Everybody knows that in the world. I'm in the gym at 6 a.m. You want to get your work in, you got to wake up. I haven't trained in the afternoon in 3 years.
Okay.
I train in the morning.
Before school.
Before school. My first clients are at 5:15 a.m. Okay. All the way in Santa Monica right now. And so they know that too. It's like, you have to give up something. You have to sacrifice something. And it's not sleep that I'm asking you to give up. I'm asking you to give up the Instagram stories that you're on from 9 to 10:30
at night. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The 2K that you're playing all the night.
Till 2 a.m. Yeah, yeah.
Give that up. Get more sleep and wake up and let's get this work in. And so showing them the plan and actually being in the gym with them. And then so before now, it was hard.
Okay.
It's still hard, right? For a person who isn't coming through my program or that I'm connected with to give them advice where they would listen. It is literally why we do this show.
Okay.
So they can hear from professionals who do this on a daily basis, what it takes to get to that next level. It is all the hard work. It is understanding process and, hey, your kid's going to be good, but wait your turn. I could probably just tell this story. Ben Schultzberg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. He's at University of Santa Barbara, UC Santa Barbara now, right? In seventh grade, he didn't play on our middle school team at Heritage. He didn't play that much.
Okay.
He didn't play that much. I had kids who were just better than him in seventh grade. He took it as a chip on his shoulder. Coach Todd didn't play me.
Okay.
I found this out later when he
Sure.
Me and Ben are great.
Okay.
His dad kind of told me this story. This is when he first committed to Creighton, when he went to Creighton right out of high school. He was like, thank you for not playing him. And I don't know if it was a slight or not. I didn't really care because me and Ben are cool and it helped him get to where he's going. But it was this. It was like, yeah, he wasn't good yet. I could see the potential in him, but I'm going to play the best players.
Right.
All of eighth grade, he locked himself in the gym. He got with a great trainer with Dash.
Okay.
And since he's just been locked in ever since. And so, cool. If that's how I have to show you,
yeah,
then that's how I have to show you as well. But it, creating that chip on kid's shoulder is what it's really about, I think.
I think some coaches some coaches will tell you if they have to motivate their players by their players playing in spite of them, sometimes that's what it takes. Yes. And maybe there's a sliver of that where, you know, I was given a dose of reality. I thought I was better. I was told guys were better than me. At least that's what I was told. I didn't play, but I'm going to take that chip and I'm going to actually play in spite of that because I want to prove you wrong. Now that can get toxic. But there's an element of that can actually be pretty healthy.
Yes. No, 100. If you're saying, hey, you're not good enough, but I'm going to help you get better, that's where it comes in, is that I never leave a kid out to hang like, oh, man, you suck. No, I actually, a lot of coaches hate it. I have this gift of seeing the development of somebody and seeing the potential that they have and telling coaches, okay, don't sleep.
Okay.
Don't, like,
stick with that kid.
You're looking at him right now. Hey. His dad is 6'8".
Okay.
His dad's 6'4".
Yeah, yeah.
He works really hard. He eats the right way. He is focused. Please just be patient.
We have
a kid who is like, who's right there, right? And I'm not going to mention him yet because he's in the process of it and he's going to be the success story, is that the first college to recruit him is a Pac-12 school and he's a junior. It didn't start off low. It's because he just been putting the work in slowly. Showing up every day, doing everything he's supposed to do, eats the right way, reads the books that I give him, doesn't really listen to crazy music, listens to motivational speakers. He has the blueprint. First school to recruit him is a Pac-12 school.
That's awesome.
You know, so that's where it's just because I've seen it and been through it so many times, I guess. And so now I just hope the parents listen and hope they listen to people who I bring on the show. It's like, hey, I don't know everything, but you've been around the block,
right?
You know, the people I'm bringing on the show are bringing on the block. So
my second question for you is all the training you do with these kids, like when they're working on their ball handling or shots, the drilling of it, is there I don't know if this is how to ask this, but I find sometimes when kids are being drilled too much, they basically turn into robots.
Yes.
And they get into a game and it's like, man, there's no feel, or man, they're really not that good. And you have those players. I can't think of a couple names, but I can think of a couple circumstances where you could watch a kid work out and you're like, oh my gosh, like this kid's like a workout pro.
Yeah.
He's only 17. He doesn't miss a shot. He's polished. And then you get him in a game. It's like, where did all that go? So my question for you is, how do you find a way to blend the drilling and the feel? Yes. Talk about that.
100%. So there's a difference from skills trainer and player developer.
Mm.
And so just like you gave us that you know, between a journalist and a sports reporter,
sure.
There's a difference from a skills trainer. I could teach skills. So I'm a skills trainer by trade, but I'm a player developer by profession, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I learn how to skill develop, but I actually develop players, and I'm talking about the holistic approach to a player, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Like, we are invested into these kids. How we do it is from Chris Johnson. So Chris Johnson has created this system inside of his training that is very, very, it's like game applicable.
Okay.
From day
okay.
One.
Okay.
So right now, in the beginning of the year, we skill train. I'm teaching you footwork. I'm teaching you how to do the move with the concept of having an IQ. Why do we attack these spots? Why do we attack certain positions? Then as they get after they master the footwork piece of it, then we put a shadow defender on you.
Okay.
Just like a boxer has a shadow.
Sure, sure.
That's what it is. We put a shadow boxer. So you know, hey, when a guy's playing me on my shoulder, this is how I should attack the room. When a guy is closing out to the right side, this is how I should attack. And then we rep those moves out with the shadow defense. So in a game, it's game applicable immediately. And so that's how we do it. We mix it up and then we play. Anything we teach, we're going to play for the last 15, 20 minutes of a workout, no matter what, especially in middle school. It's like, no, we're going to apply what you learn and let you play, let you make mistakes with it, right? Get your reps in. Everything is connected to be game applicable. There's nothing we do. We do two ball drills
just because
that connects the brain.
Yeah.
Nothing else we do personally is like, I'm going to use the word gimmicky.
Yeah.
But we don't do any gimmicky things because I believe we can translate real basketball stuff to the floor with how we do it and get the reps in.
Yeah. The gimmicky stuff is sometimes some of it's way over the top. I always think to myself, I guess, like, if I'm trying to defend it or if I see gimmicky stuff, I'm like, what is this guy? I guess what people are trying to accomplish is that no matter what I need to do with the ball, I'll be able to do it. Okay, if you need me to like juggle some pool balls while I'm back, it's like, I guess the objective is to just create as much comfortability as possible with the ball, but it's like, I feel like it's a reach.
So this is more recent in core. You know, we have a fresh bunch of kids that come in every year. We're doing finishes right now.
Okay.
We start off literally jump, stop, right hand, jump, stop, step around, step through, post like finishes. Then we go 2 foot finishes. Then we go 1 foot finishes. Then we go to Euro steps. We progress it.
Sure.
In the order it's supposed to go in, it's supposed to progress it, right? The kids do Euro steps better than they can finish off.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine.
It was ridiculous. Like, we just started Euro steps.
They're all James Harden.
And they're just,
like,
yo, you couldn't even finish a 2 foot finish off a jump stop last week, which is crazy. And we're progressing wrong. And this is why European basketball
is catching up.
It's catching up. They progress the kids. The level of the rim when they shoot. The skills that they work on. Now, for my really advanced kids who've been through core I got a kid right now who's a freshman. He was in core for 4 years, right? He did 3 years and a reclass year.
Okay.
Kid is, there's no skill he can learn from anybody.
Okay.
He knows the bag, right? The things that I work with him on, they're not gimmicky, but they are so he can get to every spot on the court.
Yeah.
Like Kyrie. Like, why not? If he knows all the fundamentals of the game already, now I'm going to advance. I'm like, yeah, we're going to replicate what Steph Curry and Kyrie do with understanding in the context of the game.
When do you
use this? Hey, you're probably going to use this move twice a game, maybe.
Right.
But we're going to work on it just to keep your interest in and to have your feet be able to access anything you want.
At any time you can do X.
Exactly. So that's kind of my mindset on it. And it works. This is our ninth year of core and 25 college athletes, bunch in high school on their way, man. It's like, it's the kids though. They listen because there's a bunch of kids. There's out of those 25 who are there, I think we've had 40 kids who've graduated high school at this point now or something around there, but 25 of them are in college. There's 15 who didn't because they weren't locked in.
Yeah.
They weren't focused. They weren't listening. They didn't follow the blueprint or they found something else in life. We have actors and business owners and great stuff like that too. But for the ones who wanted basketball, they didn't follow the blueprint.
So, congratulations to you, man. Core prep. I know. It's amazing. It's amazing.
No, I appreciate it. That's the show. Hard.
Hey, man. My pleasure, man. We covered a lot today. No, yeah, man.
Freaking amazing.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Had a lot of fun.
So you have a 24-second shot clock. That's your camera. Let the people know where to find you or any encouraging or inspirational thing that you want to say.
Sure. Hey, Tarek Patel from SB Live, high school sports reporter. You can find me on Twitter, Tarek, T-A-R-E-K underscore Fatel, F-A-T-T-A-L. Sometimes on Sundays, well, most of the time on Sundays, Channel 2. We come on at 3 or 4 o'clock, do a little bit of TV as well. But for that, that's pretty much it. A little bit of a media guy and having a lot of fun covering these high school athletes and dabbling in some college and pro stuff too on the weekends.
Awesome, man. Thank you for coming
on the show. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.